you, Zoe.
All right.
For those of you in foundations class, that was Zoe's project for her final project for the end. So that gives you an idea of some of the infinite ways that you can do your final for a foundations class. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank all of you for coming out on this foggy, foggy Super Bowl day. It's a soup out there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Super Bowl. Well, welcome and thank you for coming. We are both human and spirit. We are a combination of spiritual perfection and beauty and human flaws. The personal challenge for each and every one of us is to live in this paradox, to overcome our human frailties, our human errors, while seeking to be a fuller expression of the divine perfection. What a perfect example this day is and has been. I would have called Linda earlier, but it was pretty early, and I thought if I'd have got her up at those hours, so I gave what I thought was a little bit more rest. You've seen that picture of the duck, and on the top of the water, the duck is going along, and then down below the water, you see all the paddling going on. Well, that's what this day has been here, and we may look like we've got our act together and we're doing all this. Nothing could be further from the truth. There's a lot of paddling going on down beneath the water. But in spite of all of those human frailties, in spite of the things that have happened, and things that that are part of life, of part of being a human being, we can overcome that. And we can do it with prayer. We can do it with centering. We can do it with knowing that we are connected to a higher power. And what a perfect example we have in that this day. The title of my talk today is To Be Human. And I have three sort of major points I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about acceptance, I'm going to talk about denial, and then I'll have an invitation to a healing. First of all, acceptance. Spirituality is more of a journey toward acceptance than an attempt at perfection. Self-love and acceptance is the key to growth. Without it, you cannot move forward in life. In this month's guideposts, a guy by the name of Keith Johnson wrote a story about growing up. He was one of three rambunctious boys. At a very young age, his older brother was diagnosed with leukemia. Shortly thereafter, his dad went to prison, and mom could not manage a sick boy and two others. It was just too much for mom to do. Growing up in Compton, you had to be fast and tough, and that's what he had to do. Mom couldn't take care of him. She tried to get grandma and grandpa to take him. They couldn't take the boys. He ended up in foster homes, bouncing around from home to home. And finally, when he was 11, grandma and grandpa went ahead and took him in. He was tough. He was way too much for grandma and grandpa to handle. They were church-going, God-loving people. And it was really difficult for them. But when he was 13, he was on his way to join the gang. It was only a few blocks. Their hangout was a few blocks from his house. And he was on his way there. And as he was riding his bicycle, a big old 18-wheeler pulled in front of him, he had to stop. And as he stopped waiting for this big semi to go by, he felt the presence on both shoulders. One was telling him to go ahead and go and join the gang, but the other one was speaking in a very calm voice saying, "Turn around and go home." turn around and go home. And that's what he did. He turned around, he went back to Grandma and Grandpa's house, and he fell in Grandpa's lap, and he said, "Granddaddy, help me. I can't do this by myself." And his grandpa said, "Hallelujah." It was a life-changing experience. He had been told over and over and over, "You ain't gonna amount to nothing. You ain't gonna amount to nothing." Every one of the foster homes he was in, every one of the experiences he had been told that he was less than and that he was never going to amount to anything. Grandma and Grandpa supported him. He began going to their church. He began exploring a different side of himself. They engaged the services of a therapist. And this is a quote that Keith Johnson gave. "They found me a therapist who taught me to stop blaming my parents and to start taking responsibility for myself." Keith Johnson went on to live a very productive life, and as an adult, he began to work with disadvantaged youths just like himself. And even though he had never played football, he had never been around the game, he knew nothing about it, he became a football coach. And what he taught was personal responsibility. Joan Didion, where's Don? We studied this Wednesday. Joan Didion said, "The willingness to accept responsibility for one's own life is the source from which self-respect springs." When we take that personal responsibility, it gives us that self-respect that it takes to move on. Ernest Holmes taught us the same thing. "You are an eternal being now on the pathway of endless unfoldment, never less, but always more of yourself." It comes from this thing called you. This is not really related, but there were two brothers. These were not nice people. They were mean men. They lied, they cheated, they stole. They were not good people. And one of the brothers passed away. They were very, very wealthy. And the surviving brother sought about for somebody to do the service for him, and he wasn't finding any clergy really willing to step forward and perform a service for him, but finally went to the religious science minister and asked him if he'd do it, and the man agreed right away. And so he said, "Well, I'll tell you what, I will make a substantial contribution to your congregation if you will say that my brother was a saint." Well, the religious science minister didn't even hesitate, and he says, "Certainly, you got a deal." So this guy made this really substantial contribution to the center. And at the memorial, everything was going great, and the minister was up there, and he started to talk about the brother. And he said, "He is not a good man. He lied. He cheated people. He stole. That's how he got all of his wealth. He was not a good man. But compared to his brother, he was a saint." I don't know if that was true. Acceptance. So, number two, denial. Denial keeps you stuck, repeating the same negative pattern over and over again. If you are overweight, accept it. If you have a history of addiction, accept it. Change can only happen by admitting your errors through a filter of forgiveness and love. I think this is an appropriate time to turn to our friends in the 12-step programs. And I refer to AA. Step number one in AA, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. That is a powerful and an empowering statement. We admitted that we were powerless over alcohol. It's powerful in what it says, but also in what it doesn't say. It doesn't say that we are flawed, that we are born with something wrong with us. What it says is that we have no power over a condition that is outside of ourselves. We have no power over the condition of alcoholism. The truth of who we are individualized expressions of God. We are the children of the Most High. And maybe we have this disease, and maybe by consuming alcohol, it changes us. But the fact is that we are inherently perfect as we are. And that our lives had become unmanageable. And when we can step out of that effect, when we can step out of what alcohol does to us, then we can begin to once again allow the divine to create a life for us that is more fulfilling, more rewarding, something that can touch our very souls. But that's hard for us to do because we have a lot of negative tapes going on. And part of what our teaching at this center is all about is erasing those negative tapes. Ernest Holmes said, "But the mind is filled with the accumulated doubts of the ages, and as though a vast abyss of doubt, fear, and uncertainty were standing between you and your desires." And it is we move away from denial and toward acceptance that we can rid ourselves and step toward those desires. There's a lady by the name of Carol Kuykendall. One day, she received a diagnosis from her doctor that none of us ever want to hear. She had stage 4 ovarian cancer. And having a medical background herself, she asked the doctor, "Well, how long do I have?" And he said, 2 years, give or take. That in itself was a powerful, powerful experience. But when you add to it the fact that 1 week earlier, her husband, Lynn, had been diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor, and he likely had 2 years to live. The two of them sat down and came to the realization, the conclusion, that they didn't have any control over how long they were going to be on this earthly plane. But what they could do was to live to their fullest what time it is that they had left, what time they had remaining. Carol wrote, "My focus was on living one day at a time. But in accepting that I couldn't control when I would die, that only God numbered my days, I found a freedom that I wouldn't have known otherwise, a chance to imagine a future for myself." That was 11 years ago, and Carol and Lynn are still both in remission. She's from Boulder, Colorado, just up the street from Golden where I grew up, and I remember the Kuykendalls, and I wonder, I mean, when I saw that, I knew how to pronounce it. I wonder if those are the people that I know. Third point, an invitation to healing. Emerson observed that there's a crack in everything that God has made, and perhaps it is through that crack where God enters. I think that our open wounds are an invitation to healing. Lady by the name of Sarah Hudson Pierce of Shreveport, Louisiana, had an experience very similar to Keith Johnson's. She too was separated from her family at a very young age. Her mother could not take care of both her and her sister. They ended up in foster homes. Then they ended up in an orphanage. They grew up in the orphanage. They left at different times. They remained in touch, but not a great deal. Sarah was able to navigate this. She was able to do okay. In fact, she graduated from high school. She went on and she went to college. She met a guy. They got married. You know, she had kids of her own. Her life had filled out, but her entire life she felt rejected. She felt that no one wanted her. She felt a hole inside of her. She felt as if though maybe she wasn't good enough that for anybody to want her. But then they had been able to find, her father had an old trunk, and they were somehow able to get their hands on this trunk, and they looked through the trunk, and in there they were able to discover that she and her mother and her sister had lived in a little town called Licking, Missouri. And she wondered, Licking, Missouri. And so she wondered if it'd be possible. She wondered if she had any relatives there. It was kind of eating on the back of her mind. And she had a ton of laundry to do. And she would have been doing, you know, load after load after load. So she decided to go to the laundromat, and she could just fill up five or six, you know, washers at once. She could just bang, 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 knock them all out. So she went to the laundromat, and she filled all the washers with it. And while they were washing, and she was getting ready for the first one to come out, she could throw it in the dryer, shook down, and there was a newspaper. And it was an old newspaper, and it was the Licking News. Over 500 miles away, this tiny little town of Licking, Missouri, she ended up with the paper in the laundromat in Shreveport, Louisiana. And she thought, whoa, this is too much. There's a message in here for me. So she picked up the Licking News. Its moniker was cute. It was the only people that give a lick about licking. And she started to go through it, and she opened it up, and there was an article on the Ritz Hadley family reunion. Her family were the Ritz Hadley reunion. And she wondered if she had relatives there. So a little while later, she got up the courage, she found the name, and she called one of her cousins and identified herself. And the cousin said, of course you can come to the next reunion. And this is her quote. If we had known where you and your sister were, we would have taken you in. You are a part of this family and always will be. We love you. Those were the very words that she had longed so much to hear. You are a part of this family, and you always will be. It's part of that invitation to a healing. Now, part of the duck paddling that's going on beneath the surface that nobody sees, And one of the reasons that I just really enjoy having Linda be the platform practitioner, Linda does the most amazing job of selecting sacred readings. And she usually gives me a choice, two that to pick from. Well, two of them today were perfect. You already heard the first one. I'm going to ask her now to come up and give the second sacred reading that she had for today.
Also, coming from the Science of Mind magazine, actually this is February of 2017, so coming up. Sometimes life can seem hard, crazy, and misguided. We all have experienced those days when all we wanted to do was go back to bed. Usually this happens because we feel like we are alone in the day. We may sometimes think that there is no one else that can possibly feel like we do, that no one understands. But the truth is that we are never alone. We are always surrounded by something that can lead us out of the valley of despair. And here is the main thing. That something surrounds us is at the very center of our being. It takes strength to find out how to connect with that which connects all of life. But once that connection is made, we find the good we seek, the grace and the peace that we seek. They have always been in the midst of us. We become strong in the knowing that no matter what life throws at us, we are not alone. Because we are unified with the source of it all. Know that all the good you seek is yours now.
As your senior minister, one of my primary goals is to focus a sense of teamwork. This philosophy, the way we get to live, is too big to keep in these four walls and to talk to 100 people. This philosophy belongs out in front of a lot larger audience. There's no way I can do this by myself. There's no way that myself, along with the practitioners, bless them. They have stepped forth today in magnificent ways. And it's not just the practitioners. It's all of the other people, everybody that has stepped forth in service this day as a team. And as a team, not just me, not just the leadership council, not just the practitioners, but as a congregation, all of the 100 of us can step forward and help to spread this philosophy. And we can do it in a lot of different ways. One way is just by living it. But the second way is by talking to people that you know, inviting people that you know. We can make a difference in this world. And I invite you to do that. And I'm way off script here. The conclusion, you know, what I want you to take away this day is that your human story may not be as interesting as you think. To be human is to have wounds and challenges in life. They're common to everyone. Everybody has challenges. What makes you different, what makes any one of us different, is our determination to separate the belief from the believer. We are not here to succumb to human tragedy. We are here to triumph over it. The command of the universe is upward and onward to the greater good. And I'll leave you with one final quote from Ernest Holmes. In that inner sanctuary of your own nature, hidden perhaps from objective gaze, nestles the seed, perfection. And so it is with